Small note, because last time we finished one part of that chapter, and we talked about that Sri Aurobindo was writing about the Vedanta over there as affirming a becoming rises out of a being as an aspect of its self-delight, but that doesn't go anywhere. In other words, it's just like a sort of a natural outpouring of the being, and we participate in it. We can recognize or realize it as an essential delight, but at the same time, we also know that it has no significance beyond that. And our real sort of goal is to realize the supracosmic being outside of the becoming. This is one of the paragraphs that we read last time, and you know, I was saying that Sri Aurobindo, in his view on the Vedanta and the Gita, for that matter, holds that there isn't a complete sort of you know, presentation of either a evolutionary or any kind of enduring significance for the becoming, nor any enduring significance for the individual. Why is the individual here? But I wanted to sort of modify what I said last time, because if you really read his commentaries on the Isha Upanishad, he is drawing these conclusions from the Isha Upanishad. In other words, a significance to the becoming and a significance for the individual. But he draws these sort of, you know, I mean, it's almost he draws them out of some latency in the Upanishad. It's not explicit. And as he brings out over there a lot, the very method of the Upanishad is non-logical search. It's not the links, the rational, it's intuitive, and so the rational links are not developed, and also it is backgrounded by the whole body of Upanishads. So to understand any one Upanishad, for example, one has to first arrive at the key or seed ideas that are shared by this body of Upanishads, and then one can draw out these hidden meanings. So I just wanted to clarify that he does believe that such ideas are there in the Vedanta, but that they are not explicit. Later philosophers have not been able to find any significance of the becoming or for the individual in the Vedanta until Sri Aurobindo came along.
Okay, so shall we read the paragraph we read last time in page 670?
Yeah.
Jyoti, can you read?
Yeah, sure. I can. What page was it again?
670. 670.
670. Okay, and in the ordinary view, that one?
Think the previous one.
The previous one. The cosmic terrestrial view, which we may take next as the exact opposite of the supracosmic, considers cosmic existence as real. It goes farther and accepts it as the only reality, and its view is confined ordinarily to life in the material universe. God, if God exists, is an eternal becoming. Or if God does not exist, then nature, whatever view we may take of nature, whether we regard it as a play of force with matter or a great cosmic life, of or even admit a universal impersonal mind in life and matter is a perennial becoming. Earth is the field, or it is one of the temporary fields. Man is the highest possible form, or only one of the temporary forms of the becoming. Man individually may be altogether mortal. Mankind also may survive only for a certain short period of the Earth's existence. Earth itself may bear life only for a rather longer period of its duration in the solar system. That system may itself one day come to an end, or at least cease to be an active or productive factor in the becoming. The universe we live in may itself dissolve or contract again into the seed state of its energy. But the principle of becoming is eternal, or at least as eternal as anything can be in the obscure ambiguity of existence. It is indeed possible to suppose a persistence of man, the individual, as a psychic entity in time, a continuous terrestrial or cosmic ensouling or reincarnation without any afterlife or other life elsewhere. In that case, one may either suppose an ideal of constantly increasing perfection or approach to perfection, or a growth towards an enduring felicity somewhere in the universe as the aim of this endless becoming. But in an extreme terrestrial view, this is with difficulty tenable. Certain speculations of human thought have tended in this direction, but they have not taken a substantial body. A perpetual persistence in the becoming is usually associated with the acceptance of a greater supraterrestrial existence. Would you like to read me to read more?
No, I think we'll wait for Debashishda. He has dropped out. I'll just get him online.
Yeah. Was that just me or?
Yeah, Debashish, that was just you.
Okay. Then there is more general problem over here, but let's see how it goes.
Okay, so Jyoti just finished reading that paragraph.
Sorry?
So we actually read that paragraph last time. And here he's transiting from the previous sort of view, as he says, of existence as a supracosmic one to what he calls the cosmic terrestrial one. And last time we dwelt on this just briefly, in that the cosmic terrestrial, but the cosmic terrestrial means a materialized existence, an existence on Earth or in the material cosmos. However, he doesn't mean only a material existence. In other words, as he points out over here, the question is still up for grabs as to whether this material cosmos is a kind of a sort of a latency of life, of the life principle, or even a latency of the mind principle, whether it's actually a kind of a mind matter, one may say. But also, as far as the individual, the human being is concerned, it's still up for grabs as to whether the human individual is fully only a kind of a material being with just consciousness as a sort of a brief or transient result of materiality, of biology, or of physics and chemistry.
Okay, let me add the Vashishta again.
This will get a little better. So to continue with that cosmic terrestrial view, it's basically the materialized system. This basically, the limiting condition of all experience. We have some kind of a soul, which is outside of our bodies, that has a certain reality outside of our bodies, or persists beyond death, as we may call it. It can have any substantial reality in or by itself outside of the earth. So it has to immediately reincarnate, in other words. And this kind of a notion belongs to the Greek notion of transmigration of the soul. And the Greeks had the idea of reincarnation. They called it the transmigration of the soul. Pythagoras taught it. And this notion does not envisage an existence of the soul in worlds outside this earth. One immediately takes another birth or moves from one body to another on the death of that body. So similarly, we may find that there is a certain kind of a persistence of the material becoming, even if we move to another, if not to this earth, suppose, and he kind of takes that up in the next paragraph, that there may be life on other planets, and we may even sort of envisage the fact that we move from this planet to another planet, or into embodied forms in another planet. But nevertheless, we are tied to the material cosmos. So what is Constant's view, and as he's saying, he's taking a certain extreme form of this view, in which this cosmic terrestrial view of existence is accepted as the only reality. Okay, and it's something we have to understand about when he uses the term reality or the term truth. One aspect of reality or truth is its eternity. It is eternal because it can persist beyond all kinds of phenomena, beyond all sorts of, even consciousness effects of consciousness. And so, becoming, in this case, a material becoming is.
Oh no.
View, it is this becoming which is the ultimate truth or the reality, that there is a permanence and eternity to becoming. Now, we may contest that view, and there are, of course, philosophies that contest that view. As he says over here, man individually may be altogether mortal. In other words, humanity itself may, become extinct, disappear. Mankind, or actually the human being, may be mortal in the sense there is no soul or persistence of the human individuality. Mankind also may survive for a certain short period of the earth's existence. In other words, this is the extinction of the human race. Self may bear life only for a longer period of its duration in the solar system. So the self might disappear. That system may itself one day come to an end, etc. So, and then the universe itself may dissolve or contract again into the seed state of energy. So all these possibilities are there, but there is a certain kind of a recurrence of the becoming. There may be an expansion and contraction of the universe, but it again ends. So this notion of the eternity of a material becoming, material cosmos, it seems to be the truth of this view of existence. Now, if we contest this, if we take the other view that even the coming is not permanent, then we are left with the view that there is nothing permanent. This is sort of like a nothingness argument. And that also can be held, but then that is more like a sort of a view that occurs on the supracosmic. In other words, the cosmic does not exist, and if there is anything that exists outside of it, exists as a truth, and exists outside of it, we cannot That would be the agnostic standpoint. And if we deny its existence, that would be the nothingness standpoint, the nihilistic standpoint. So here he is making that assumption that there is a permanent becoming. Now, many philosophies hold to that because there is a very strong intuition of that. Even science holds to the fact that the most probable durability of this cosmos lies in its eternal sort of expansions and or contractions. So it's a rhythmic persistence, one may say. Similarly, we may find that there are notions of kind of view that there is no being, there's a becoming. There's no need.
In the natural limits, with a terrestrial aim of being, the superior distance of the race and the greatness and of the collective life determine nature and scope of our ideals. But if the progress or welfare of humanity included as not our business or as a delusion, the individual is there to possible perfection or make the most of his life in whatever way his nature demands, will then be life's significance. So that's a description of non-spiritual
popular. So I was saying that philosophers later believe even a becoming, but not a being independent of it. This view goes back. In fact, Nietzsche takes his own stand from some of the pre-Socratic philosophers like Heraclitus. Schreer makes a case elsewhere that the eternal persistence for becoming can easily be taken for the existence of a being, that the becoming is a being, but a view in which the being is involved in becoming. In other words, it doesn't have any existence outside of the becoming. One may say that the kind of standpoint that Nietzsche takes, which is considered to be a sort of nothing in the beginning and God at the end. Okay, and in a way, a number of contemporary philosophers have sort of followed after him, whether they admit of the possibility of a divine fulfillment at the end or not. Even Jacques Derrida's view is a similar one, where there is a becoming, and the notion of a becoming with being implicit in it. And also the notion of a God at the end of it. And he brings that up as a possibility in the first of those two paragraphs towards the end. In that case, he's talking about the persistence of the soul. In that case, one may either suppose an ideal of constantly increasing perfection or approach to perfection or a growth towards an enduring felicity somewhere in the universe as the aim of this endless becoming. Of course, the viewpoint of Nietzsche, or for that matter, Paolo Soleri, who takes after Nietzsche in this sort of view of God at the end, is not so much that the becoming itself has got any kind of purpose to it, teleology to it, but that the becoming has spawned a creative power in the individual that ultimately can exceed itself or exceed the beginnings of the power of becoming. In the next paragraph, he's gone on to talk about what we are left with as individuals, as human beings, if we take this standpoint. If there is only a terrestrial becoming, then what is our proper attitude to take in this becoming, in this reality, as humans, as conscious beings, with what the human being has in store, if that this is the reality? And I was saying that the Greek view was that of a sound mind and a sound body, of an ethical life. Persistence on earth provide the largest field and the natural limits for the terrestrial aim of our being. The superior persistence and importance of the collective life should determine the nature and scope of our view, which is the view of, within Greek philosophy itself, of the hedonists or of the Epicures, who ultimately took a more moderate view, but were generally considered to be sort of very hedonistic. And in India, we have the view of the Charvaks. These of materialists, Sri Aurobindo dismisses as being in some not a very, a kind of an enduring strain of human thought, as he says over here. Even the temporary character of the collective being of humanity does not so very matter, except most materialist view of existence. So that is basically the view that holds that, because we don't have any enduring sort of reality, we might as well make the best, enjoy what we can while we can. But as he's saying over here, this does not give us any kind of comfort. It is in fact even more depressing at the bottom. Man needs a purpose to live for, and that is one of the sort of deepest intuitions. We come into this earth with a certain kind of a will to exceed ourselves, and that will to exceed ourselves comes from the transcendent, which is within us and seeking realization. But if we deny existence to the transcendent through our sort of affirmation of a temporary becoming, then we still find it very difficult not to live with purpose in our lives. That's why there is this kind of a notion that even if we don't have any life, or if we even as a race don't endure, still while we are, our best way of living our lives is to put our will to some kind of manifestation of the individual and the collective life. This, even in modern times, with nihilistic philosophers like Sartre, becomes the case. This is why Jean-Paul Sartre faced some kind of a communistic ideal, because though even the questionable for people like that, that it is a nothingness which is fronting itself as a being. Nevertheless, that experience is one which needs to affirm a certain kind of purpose in the good of those others who are having that experience, the activity of humanity. So this is how the cosmic terrestrial view, though ultimately negative, because not giving any kind of fundamental reality at all to the individual, nor giving any reality to as something which persists outside of the cyclings of a big, nevertheless, it has a certain kind of a will, some good, some ideal, some individual or collective culture or discipline. So that is how he points to this cosmic terrestrial view, arriving at some sort of a moral or ethical ideal. It swings on either the collective or the individual or both. And he ends it by saying that paragraph that you read, by saying that even if it is that the welfare of humanity is considered to be irrelevant, still there is the, and that was sort of the Greek ideal that.
Okay. the superiority of the material cosmos, and it accepts the temporary and human life as the first fact we have to start from. Adds to it a perception of other worlds or planes of existence, which have a, you know, or at least a more permanent duration. It perceives behind the mortality of the bodily life of man the immortality of the soul within him. The belief in the immortality, the eternal persistence of the individual human spirit, apart from the body, is the key word of this call. That of itself necessitates its existence in the material or terrestrial. Since for this embodied spirit, there can be no abiding place in a world whose every operation depends upon some play force, but to vital material, in and with the forms of matter. Few things as beyond, and that the Earth's life is in some way or other only an episode of his immortality or a deviation from a spiritual into a material existence.